Good evening, everyone. I feel privileged to extend my warm welcome to all our viewers present for the knowledge series of SGRKF. SGRKF started its journey taking small yet significant steps towards sustainable development of the society while strengthening the socio-cultural environment. Aiming to promote literature and words of wisdom in the mainstream, the Concept Knowledge Series took place and has also taken the shape of a literature festival since December 2019 as Orange City Literature Festival. The second edition was conducted online in November 2020, and we have received a very good response to. This year, once again, we are organizing a third edition of Orange City Literature Fest from 26th of November till 28th of November by SGR Knowledge Foundation in association with GH Raisoni University, powered by Raisoni Group of Institutions. Today's session is the part of our Lit Fest and the 54th session of the Knowledge Series. Knowledge is like a garden. If it's not cultivated, it cannot be harvested. Hi, I'm Corina Pereira, and here I'm with Mr. Anand Neelakantan, and our moderator for this session is Ms. Madhavi Naidu. Today, we will be experiencing the essence of remarkable stories on five unforgettable women from the Ramayana, as it is of the book Valmiki's Women, published by Westland Publication and Amazon Company. Before we start our session, let me give you all a small introduction of our guest. Our speaker today, Mr. Anand Neelakantan, is an author of the Bahubali trilogy, the prequel of S.S. Rajamouli's blockbuster movie. Mr. Neelakantan is also the author of Asur, Tale of the Vanquished, which told the Ramayana from Ravan's point of view. He followed it up with the tremendously successful Ajaya series. Neelakantan's books have been translated into more than 9 languages, including Indonesian. He is also a prolific writer in Malayalam and regularly publishes stories in the prestigious Malayalam magazine. Mr. Neelakantan is also a cartoonist. You can look him up on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram using the handle at It's Anand Neel. We are glad to have you, sir, with us again, as it's been an old association with you from the pre-lit fest.
Thank you.
We have our moderator, Ms. Madhavi Naidu. Ms. Madhavi Naidu is an artist, creates abstracts on canvas, and has sold more than 300 artworks. Having studied English literature, she is an avid reader and has interest of reading different genres. Ms. Madhavi has been the editor of the Rotary Club magazine Golden Orange. She also moderated the sessions for Orange City Literature Festival, second edition. Happy to have you with us, ma'am.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I would now request ma'am to kindly take over the session.
Good evening, sir. It's really an honor to be here with you. And before we start, we would like to hear from you about your Valmiki's Women.
Good evening, Madhavi, and thank you for this. Valmiki's Women is my 11th book, published work. This is a part of the Ramayana series which I have been writing. So I have been writing Ramayana from various angles because I believe Ramayana is one of the greatest epics or stories ever told. Across Asia, it has influenced culture, language, literature, art, music, whatnot for the past 2000 or 3000 years. So viewing Ramayana from various perspectives have been my forte. I started with Asura, Tale of the Vanquished, which is Ravana's Ramayana. Then I did CRK Ram for Star TV, which was Sita's Ramayana. Then for Sony TV, I had done Mahabali Hanuman, which is a very devotional take on Ramayana from the perspective of Hanuman. Then I did Vanara. Simultaneously, I was doing Vanara, where Vanara is the perspective of Bali, Sugriva, and Tara. The Ramayana is seen from another angle. Part of that, the next part was naturally to write from the women's perspective. So I had chosen marginalized women, not just any women. There are lots of strong characters in Ramayana, many of whom have got their own novels or shows or films. But there are certain characters who are always portrayed in either shades, or either they are ignored, like Shanta, barely spoken about, or are always portrayed as evil characters or bad characters and not even discussed at all. So I thought, why not see the entire epic, or at least some plots of the epic, some situations in the epic from their angle, and see how the same story would look like. So I had taken Tataka, Mantara, Shurpanaka and all. And as a, what you call, an introduction, I had taken the story of the hunter who kills Hunter and his family, so his daughter and wife, who kills the Kraunja bird, one of the pair of the Kraunja birds that prompted Valmiki to write Ramayana. So, and what is the meaning of Ramayana? So as a companion book, the same Amazon Audible has come up. I have written an Audible show, which also simultaneously came up along with the Valmiki's Women, and which is available for free for all members. It's a 12 to 15 hours, both in English and Hindi, 12 to 15 hours of my talk on Ramayana. All the Ramayanas across Asia, I have taken bits and pieces from there and try to tell the same Ramayana story using all these four versions and explain what all lessons perhaps we can take from it. So this forms a part of that series. It doesn't mean you'll have to read all these books to understand any of these books. All are standalone also. But if you read and see these shows, or at least read all these books one by one or randomly, it will add perhaps to a greater understanding. So this is a very feminine perspective, Valmiki's Women, especially from the subaltern side. Were a subaltern angle, which I have taken. It's a bit contrarian also. It goes into the minds of these marginalized characters. So it's all about women's Ramayana.
Thank you so much. But would the uninitiated understand this totally diverse view, because they're actually perceived as evil characters, like Kekei and Mantara, at least. So,
that is why it is important to read this book.
Yes. And it is indeed interesting that you're talking about your audiobook, the Ramayana, with so many different little versions or little differences, because we all are only familiar with the Tulsidas Ramayana. So what, according to you, is a major... I mean, we've also heard somewhere that one version has Sita as Ravan's daughter.
Lots of versions.
So none of us know those things, mostly, at least.
Tulsidas Ramayana is mainly in the northern belt, but every language in India has its own Ramayana, which is popular with that. Telugu has its own, Tamil has its own, Malayalam has its own, Kannada, Odia, Bengali. They all have multiple versions of Ramayana as such, but at least as popular as like it depends on to who you ask. Many people in the south would not have even heard about Tulsidas Ramayana. Ramayana they know,
I think, because of TV we have.
TV some people would have, but traditionally Tulsidas Ramayana is totally different from Valmiki's Ramayana, and each Ramayana is different from each other. So it depends on which geography you are from, which cultural background you are from, to say that this is a Ramayana I heard. So there are versions of Ramayana, almost 30 of them, outside India and in the southern India, where Sita is a daughter of Ravan. In Jain Ramayana also, Sita comes as a daughter of Ravan. So the entire premise and the plot changes. And there are Ramayans where Sita kills another Ravan, not the same Ravan. One Ravan, Ravan is there, especially in the folk tales of Andhra.
Yes, I've heard.
Sita
Ravan. Mahiravan.
Mahiravan is separate. Mahiravan story, Ahiravan, Mahiravan story is separate.
Hmm.
Other than that, there is something called Sahasramuga Ravan.
Okay.
So Sahasramuga Ravan, Ram is not able to defeat him. So Sita, who is the avatar of Shakti, not Lakshmi here, who is the avatar of Kali or Shakti, who has both Kali, Kali's power and Lakshmi's power, both are there. She kills, she is forced to take the weapon and kills the Sahasramuga Ravan. So this kind of folk tales and multiple versions are available over the years. So that is why there should not be a monotext on something like Ramayana.
Yeah, like this is right, this is wrong. There's nothing like that.
There is nothing like that because Ramayana keeps evolving and changing depending on the culture, geography and the times you live in. So what is relevant to Tulsidas Ramayana will not be relevant to, the Ramayana will always be relevant. But Tulsidas Ramayana or Adhyatma Ramayana or Ezhuthachan's Adhyatma Ramayana or the Kannada Ramayana will be relevant more to the time and the geography which it was written. So the geography influences. So Ramayana in Bali or Indonesia or Philippines is written for the people there.
Yes.
So the Ramayana of Thailand is its own version.
Yes.
So Ramayana will keep changing.
People also keep changing.
People, times also keep changing. So that is a sign of a living thing. No?
Yes.
What is dead will not evolve. What is living only evolves.
Evolves. Yes.
So it is up to you to choose which Ramayana you want on one particular day or for your life, the entire life. It depends on you.
Coming back to your Valmiki's women, you have shown that Kaikeyi really loves Shanta, Rama's sister. And her characters, of course, as you said, was quite ignored or, well, none of us have read much about her. So was this taken from any text or any source?
Kaikeyi's story is available in a lot of Ramayana also and other Puranas also and Mahabharata also, some versions come. Shanta's story, entire thing is from Mahabharata. Mahabharata's Ramabhakyana is there in Vanaparva where Yudhishthira has told the story of Ram. It's a different, Valmiki's Ramayana is a Vyasa's Ramayana is a different take on Ramayana actually, Valmiki's Ramayana. So one cannot say this is correct and Vyasa is wrong. When you say only Valmiki is right, even Valmiki may not agree to that. Because Vyasa is also equally important, right? So in that Shanta's story comes. And Kaikeyi's previous life, Mantara's previous life, these are available in various texts. What I have done, I have given voices to them. See, this kind of dialogues will not be available or the characterization will not be available. That's what I do as a writer. That's my creative liberty. But the Kaikeyi was born at so-and-so place. She grew up without the mother. All those things are available. Shanta was the first child.
We know that bit. But the relationship and the way the love is shown and, you know, further... this like Kaikeyi showing so much concern to Shanta. I guess we were not, at least the lay people haven't read much.
That is what a writer does. No? That is where the interpretation comes.
That's your interpretation.
In Kamba Ramayana, Sita and Ram meet before the marriage and they are in love.
Okay.
Which is Kamba's interpretation. So this has been done time and time in the Bhasa. The Sanskrit poet in 200 BC perhaps, or 300 BC, he changes the climax of Mahabharata.
Yes.
So I don't know from where this concept has come that this is authentic. This is not, Ramayana is not the Bible or Quran. Ramayana or Gita or none of the Indian texts are an equivalent of a holy book of a Semitic religion.
Because it's all added on. As time goes on.
No, its purpose itself is different. These are the tools to understand life and oneself. They are not what you call the commandments that you have to do this and you should not do that. If you don't do this, the God will come and punish you. No. That concept itself is not there. So that is what I'm trying to tell through various perspectives also. And that's how the Ramayana and Mahabharata has evolved. So the intolerance on, this is authentic. Who has read the authentic Ramayana? Every mother tells her own Ramayana to the child.
Yes, true.
And it's not something like you study in Sunday class where the priest will come and tell you this is it and your question is not correct. This is something which keeps evolving as per the people, and there are as many Ramayanas as there are as many people. That's what it makes our civilization unique.
Very true, very true. Why didn't you choose Mandodari among one of them?
Mandodari has been written by many people. That's one reason. Second thing, I wanted to take people who are ignored. So that's why I took that. It will come as a second part of this book. Mandodari, Ahalya, and all will come as second part.
If Surpanaka is a warrior, as I mean, we know and shown and seen Meenakshi in your book,
In my
so
book, she's not a warrior at all.
she's not a warrior, but like generally they speak that she's a warrior also. So one question which is totally different is, why didn't she take her own revenge? Why did she go and cry to her brother?
Because she's not a warrior. I don't know. Just to make her black, they made her a Rakshasi, and now evil is black. These are all very colonial, after colonization, this is our inferiority complex speaking. You paint the kind of racism that exists in our country has a lot to do with this kind of
So
colonization.
anybody who's black is Rakshasi and Asura and things like
Though Krishna is black, Kali is black, Sita is black, Rama is black. But you don't even dare to show it in our television series. It has to be painted white, everyone. If at all, then you paint them blue.
Yeah, blue. Yes.
You don't even dare to, because these are all the things which we should introspect. No, these are all like black is associated with evil,
Even.
black is associated with casteism, racism, so many things. So many, what do you call, so many dirt and dust has accumulated in our thought process and civilization. So that is, these are all the reflections of it. Evil means it has to be black.
And dark.
You can see the element of racism and the regionalism and all in this. When the how the TV portrays it, how the what do you call the literature portrays them. So if you are black, you are evil. Black is the color of evil.
Yeah, they're subtly putting it into our minds and conscious and everything. So you're constantly thinking that black is evil.
Imagine a civilization which celebrated Krishna, which itself means black. Krishna
Yeah,
itself is
Krishna is
blacky.
black. Yeah. Like
Krishna,
this dog I've heard
huh?
about, Jackie the
Krishna,
Blackie.
the God itself has been black, isn't it? All many of our gods. Means we are color neutral. We have all white, black, red, all kind of gods. But Krishna is a celebrated god. But
God.
even that Krishna, we are forced to make paint him in Ujala blue or make him white, if you see, is very fair in our television series.
He is. Even in the statues, I mean
Even in
marble
the
statues and everywhere, there he is very fair. He is white.
marble, they can't avoid. No, marble mostly it
They
comes
can
in
use
white.
granite, right? I mean
Yes,
dark,
I know. Many
dark.
places, see how it came, marble at that time, granite may not be available. Where the marble statues are basically in Rajasthan and other places where granite may not be available. So the South Indian statues are all black.
Yeah, yes.
So that might, the statues, it might not be a reason for the color of this thing. But television, films, where you can actually cast black-skinned people, no? But
Yes.
writers don't have much of a choice. The producers or directors do that. Even in very popular films, if he's an evil character, those guys have to be black.
Yes, true. So when you I mean coming to your other books like Asura, Vanara, etc., what, I know it's a cliche question, you must have answered it 1,000 times, but what makes you choose these characters that are perceived as negative? Do you want to show the other side of them, or what is it like, make them show as like they do have positive points and it's always shown as that they are just villains? Why did you
I have
choose?
answered it many times over the last 9 years. I've been answering it, but I will answer it again.
Was for a
First,
new viewers.
yeah, definitely. First thing is that there is no concept of evil in our philosophy, in Indian way of thought. There are only evil deeds. There are no evil persons. That's the first thing. Second thing, even that is relative. This concept of good and bad, good triumphing over bad is a very what you call Semitic or a Brahmic concept. I'm not saying it is good, it is superior or inferior or anything like that. I'm just putting it as a way of looking at the worldview. All the Semitic religions, Abrahamic religions, including communism, which also is a what you call a kind of religion, Semitic religion, all work on the duality. So that's how the world is viewed. So God created the world, except communism, the other three major Semitic religions, so Judaism, Islam and Christianity. God created the world on so-and-so day, 6 days or seven, in seventh day he rested, 6 days he did. And then against God, there is the devil, his son who is this thing, devil is there, or Satan is there. Good versus bad, already you have, Satan keeps tempting people, good versus bad. Sin versus redemption. You do good thing, you go to heaven. You do bad things, you go to hell. You are judged at the end of the time. So this is very simply put. There are much more complicated and layered in this, but this very simply put, this is what. So worldview is always about black versus white, sin versus redemption, heaven versus hell. In all the Eastern philosophies, Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, Confucianism, Taoism, and all, this kind of concept of linear time itself is not there. The time is cyclic. So there is no end. There is no end to the world to be judged. So who judges it? The judge is the time. Kala. That's why Shiva is called Mahakala. That's why Krishna says, I am the time in Gita. So the time is the God. Time. Why time is the God? Time is the God because time is the thing which makes the fruit ripe. The fruit of your karma, karma bala. So the entire story is about, stories were about before we were influenced by these thoughts, where we, what we did, we integrated both of it, which itself creates a logical problem. So prior to the contact with these civilizations, if you go back where Ramayana, Mahabharata were, and all were originally conceived, it was a play of karma and karma bala. So that is why Valmiki doesn't hide the flaws of Ram. Ram will have flaws. Many people now become uncomfortable when you question it because they are trying to see Ram as a perfect man and the perfect man like a Semitic god. He is not a Semitic god. Because in Purana, he is an avatar. He is a Manava avatar. He is a human avatar.
Avatar.
How will a human behave? He will have all the flaws of the human. Not all the flaws, but he will have some flaws of the human. So that is why they don't shy away from showing any of these things, both Valmiki and Vyasa. And whatever Krishna or Rama does, they pay the price for it. Just like anyone else. Why? Because they have come to this web of Maya. This illusionary world, where whatever karma they do, it will have an effect.
Effect.
They will have to pay. So Rama, when he kills what they call Bali, he's doing a karma. There is no need for, he may give justification, but it's not a God's justification. It's a man's justification when he's giving.
Yes.
That is why it sounds incomplete when he does that.
That's why we are not convinced many times.
We are not convinced because it's how to be convinced for that? Because we are viewing it in the sense of how can God do any wrong?
Yeah.
But here the concept of wrong is not there. That is the choice which he has to make at that time. And he pays the price for it in the next janma. Whether there is next janma, whether it is logical, you should not bring that to that. We are not talking about rationality here. We are talking about the this world's logic, like any story world's logic. So here in this world, in this belief system, there is a cyclic time and there will be more and more people, more and more janmas. So whatever you know, many of the things, you will eat the fruit of karma in this janma itself, this life itself. Some you may have to carry forward. So that's called the prarabdha. The prarabdha thing is what Rama eats the fruit as Krishna. When Bali comes as Jara and kills him, then only the thing gets complete.
Cycle completes.
Then there is no good or bad. It's just action and reaction and action and reaction. So when I am writing it, I am trying to bring back this. So nobody is bad or nobody is absolutely good or bad. Everything is relating. That's what I'm trying to say.
So, are you an atheist, an agnostic, a believer? What is religion for you?
I'm agnostic. I'm not saying I'm a comparing with rishis or anything, but every thinker, every rishis in India were agnostic. At least to begin with. Because that is the, then you can reach anywhere. But the position should be always agnostic when you start. I'm a beginner, so it has to be agnostic. If you are a believer, if you are a total believer, you are already reached a conclusion. Then what is the fun in life?
What? Yeah. So is this why you've started writing or researching? Because you're agnostic, because you start questioning?
Definitely.
Theories?
Definitely. Yeah. That is the reason. No, see, this is a quest. Writing is a quest. People try to find it. It's a quest. You have a disturbed mind. You keep thinking. This is what some people find solace in art. Some do it in some other way. For me, this is it. This is my way.
Is religion an integral part of my mythology, or have we made it that?
There is no religion for us. No, in India, there is no religion. Where is religion?
Like what we think religion, like Hinduism. You know what we think.
Hinduism is becoming a religion now, with becoming a bit rigid and all. But otherwise, traditionally, there is nothing called a religion. You can call it any name, a geographic name.
Sanatan Dharma, basically.
Whatever names are irrelevant. Rituals play a part, but you have to choose your rituals, not be enforced by the society. Not doing ritual also is a ritual.
Yes.
So, rituals play a part because these are all the tools. So it is very clearly mentioned by even by Shankara, Adi Shankara and all, that why should a person like Adi Shankara, who talked about Advaita, write on all these devotional Vajagovindam and all these devotional poetry? He is supposed to have what he called established a lot of temples and the rituals of the temples. So in one of my books, I am narrated that story also. So when he goes to this thing, no, suddenly I forgot that. when he see the gist of it is this. He goes to the in the Bihar, he goes to have the, in Pataliputra, he goes to have the debate. So there, this saint is who becomes, suddenly I forgot his name. I'm racking my brain too.
He meets a chandal, that one.
No, not the chandal. This is about the saint and his wife who argues with Adi Shankara, no?
Okay.
Suddenly it slipped my mind.
Never mind, it's okay. I mean, you can give us the gist of it.
So he says, gist of it, he is doing his father's death ritual. So Shankara comes there, Adi Shankara comes there, and he asks, I can't debate now. Can't you see I am doing the ritual for my father? So Shankara says, what proof you have that the Pitrus take this kind of offering? Is there any meaning in this ritual if you think about it? Then they go into a big debate, and Shankara convinces him that these rituals are it's not important. Your quest for Brahman or the truth, it's not important, and he convinces him that. And this guy becomes Shankara's disciple, and later when Adi Shankara establishes all the mud, he is made one of the adhipati of Sringeri. So then after a few days, he finds that Shankara is codifying the death rituals, Shraddha Karmas, for the entire people. So this disciple gets confused and angry. He says, what are you doing? You only convinced me these are all irrelevant. Yeah. Now you are doing all this. You are codifying it for the
people. You're saying this is my parent.
No, Shankara says rituals, it's about your understanding. Rituals are for the living, not for the dead. Very profound statement.
Very true. Very true.
Rituals are for the, so this is the kind of rational understanding even in rituals. The rituals are for the living. It is to control your grief. It is to have a separation about the living and the dead.
Dead, yes.
They are not. So this is at his heart, Shankara is so rational when he says that.
Yes.
He is going beyond rationality. Why? Because if you say, one example, what did he say? Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's in one of his teaching, he talks about it to Vivekananda. He says, the most important thing, whatever philosophy you follow, atheism, agnosticism, bhakti, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa was somebody who used to take different forms and worship. Sometimes he used to be the Muslim form, he used to worship. As a Christian, he used to worship. So he used to experiment with Gandhiji. He used to experiment with so many ways of doing the worship. These are the legends. Okay, some may say, no, it is not that. I'm not here to argue about that. These are the legends which I have heard. But to Vivekananda, he says, whatever form you take, it is about the compassion. First thing, you should have the compassion to yourself and to others. First compassion should be towards yourself, then to others. So somebody is blind. He is taking a stick and going. You are not blind. So will you go there, take out the stick from him and say, what the hell you are doing? You don't need any stick. You walk. The people who are doing rituals or devotional thing, they do it because they need it. Maybe they are blind. Maybe they are lame. Maybe they are feeling weak for that day, particular day.
So it's like a crutch which gives you strength.
It is just that. That is the Indian understanding of even prayer. It is just that. So if you are an atheist and you go and argue to him, to the man, from your truth, saying that, why do you need a crutch? I can run. I can climb the mountains. So why you should also do like that? Maybe that person cannot do that. His leg is broken.
Yes.
He has arthritis. He's old. Maybe in his youth, he used to run like that. Now he's 90 years old. So once you have compassion, you will feel somebody is atheist. It doesn't matter. Somebody is agnostic. It doesn't matter. Whatever floats your boat. That has been the Indian position always.
Always.
Buddha refused to talk about God, saying that it's a waste of time. If you want God, you have it. Don't want God, don't have it. Don't go and poke your nose into others' place and say, no, this God is right. My God is right. Your God is not right. My way is the correct way. Your way is wrong. Or why are you doing this? There is no God. No God for you. No God for you. Good for you. Don't have it.
It wouldn't work today.
You want to take a kavadi and dance? Do it. It's all up to you.
Yes. But another controversial question in a way. What would you say about the new age gurus, the gurus today? Do we need gurus?
Depends on you. I don't need guru. Or I don't need these kind of gurus. But if you feel this is the only way, see again, the important thing is being non-judgmental. If gurus are doing criminal activities, it is for the law of the land to take care of it. If you feel it has to be taken care and that is your dharma to ensure these people don't exploit people, then definitely you should go in that path and try to stop these gurus. So whatever makes you right, you will have the karma bala of that, whatever you do that. That's all we can say.
So
a lot of them sell it. A lot of them sell. All religions exploit the weakness of it. The more ignorant people are, the more gurus will be. The more gurus there will be. I'm not saying all the gurus are bad or all the gurus are evil or anything like that. Some guru may appear evil to me because I don't need it. It all depends on which class you are, no?
Yes.
If you are in LKG and you have done your, somebody has done PhD, the PhD guide is different and the LKG teacher is different. Both serve a purpose.
Yes.
So you have a PhD, you don't go and make fun of a kid who is doing A, B, C, D. You don't go and make fun of a kid or the teacher who teaches that. It may sound silly to you because you have passed that stage. That's all.
So you're talking about karma bala. So it's such an integral part of mythology and Hinduism. So
There are contrasting, contradicting theories in Hinduism. See, you cannot... box anything about India or Hinduism in one this thing, one box, saying that this is the religion, anything else is a blasphemy, and you should be killed or burned as a witch, like in crusade times they used to do. No, that is not there. So karma is just one among many theories. Advaita is one among many theories. It's not the absolute theory. It is a way of understanding. It's a tool. It's like a huge toolbox you have. Not even toolbox. There are brushes, there are chisels, there are bow and arrows, there is a cricket bat. There are thousands of things. Because there are so, human nature is so varied. So you can't just say, no, the chisel is the only right tool to do anything. And the brush is a idiotic tool. You can't use the brush.
So, what are these tools for? Ultimately, what are these tools for? Is there something?
To find yourself. To know, to see, if you have no questions in life, you are a lucky person. But it is in human nature to have thousands of questions. Sometimes we stop asking questions, so we are satisfied with whatever stories they are given, however logical or illogical. These stories are also tools. Satisfied with that, be happy with that. Some people like us are never satisfied, so we keep asking questions. But life is about that. Everybody asks questions, the society went on progressing. But nobody asks questions, the society becomes rotten. So there should be people who ask questions, there should be people who answer them, there should more questions should arise from that. That's a, it's an eternal quest of humans. So like, why do you draw? You are a great artist. So why do you draw? It's like that, the same way. So it's, you draw, you draw well, you have a skill for that, and it gives you immense happiness, perhaps a way of life and a way of living also. But you don't go around saying that somebody who is playing cricket, saying that what nonsense, what sort of thing you are doing, you should be painting. You won't tell that.
No.
Either you enjoy him playing cricket.
Huh? I don't want so much competition also.
That is another way of understanding the Indian cultures. There is no Indian culture. There are millions of Indian cultures or rituals or ways. So that is why an Aghori or someone, the Siddha, Naga Siddhas and other people sometimes who eat flesh or carrion are also a part of the religion. People who don't even eat egg or milk are also a part of the same religion. Both extremes are accepted. Both are right and both are wrong.
According to many, they are not also. You know, people think that if you... I mean, you're not doing harm to anything. You're not. You're a pure vegetarian, so you're a better person. You know,
those
kind of concepts are coming up now, more rigid.
That is hubris. No, you are vegetarian. See, I am a vegan. That doesn't make me superior or inferior. It's just my choice.
Yes, but nobody is thinking of it more
that
like a choice.
Vegetarianism got associated with the casteism. Yeah. Casteism. We talk about so many great things about Indian culture, but it's all these positives have been negated by the casteism. Which evolved. So that's why there is nothing called absolutely right or absolutely wrong in anything in the world. The poison of casteism has it's like one drop of poison in a big this thing of fire.
Yes,
like,
that spoils everything. Yes,
it's as poison. So casteism, vegetarianism has got now associated with casteism. So this kind of superiority complex of many people is because of the inherent hidden or not so hidden racist and casteist approach in them. It should not be, we owe a lot to Mahavira and Buddha, more to Mahavira than Buddha for the vegetarian or vegan way and Ahimsa and other. So even though there are slokas of Ahimsa in Vedas and all, but enough more slokas are there about violence and sacrifice.
Also,
but Buddha changed it, and so that's how society evolves. There is we need not be ashamed to say that once they used to sacrifice animals. Now sacrificing animals, not sacrificing animals, eating a particular food, not eating a particular food, none of these are the signs of either superiority or inferiority, good or evil. These are just, as I said, some paint, some sing, some dance, some keep quiet, some sleep. How does it matter?
Yes.
All personal choices.
Now, going on a totally different line, I mean, you've written the prequels to Bahubali, the big blockbuster, as in your introduction also. So that doesn't have any core concept from any of the epics. So how did you conceptualize that?
I am a story writer, no? So I'm not just a retailer, no?
It's true. But were you given any kind of outline by Mr. S.S. Rajamouli or
no.
to be this way? Nothing?
No.
No.
Then I would not have written at all.
No.
I am fortunate, and Rajamouli sir is that way. He is one of the greatest artists who understands, as a storyteller, who understands what is about storytelling. He has told so fascinating stories. So he knows the creative process.
Mm.
So even, I didn't even have to ask. He first thing he said is, you have the full freedom to develop. Don't make, in a joking way, he said, don't make Ballala Deva and Bijala Deva as the heroes and Bahubali as the villain, because he had read my Asura and all that, only he had called me. Other than that, he gave me total freedom. So all the characters except Shivagami and Kattappa, including their characterization, was my creation. That freedom, both Rajamouli sir and the Arka, Shobhu sir and Prasad Devineni, they had given me.
It was an amazing read, like in the sense it took you into different kind of fantasy world. We've had this fantasy kind of world and we've had these superheroes and all that, but our youth doesn't seem to be as interested in it as like now we get, the Western, like Harry Potter, the kind of...
For that, we need to improve our production values and we need to think big. Bahubali was an attempt like that.
Yes.
You got interested in Bahubali more than Harry Potter or anything. So it depends on how you make. You don't give enough budgets. You get and you don't give enough dedication. See, Bahubali was a work of 5 years of dedication from the actor to director to everyone. The writer, the story Vijayendra Prasad sir created for the film and Rajamouli sir's screenplay. So many things. Kiravani's music, Sabu Saril's set. All those things, Prabhas, all the actors, Rana Dugabattis, all the actors, and Shivagami, Kattappa, Satyaraj, Kattappa.
Everything was just perfect there. But when it comes to books, how do you get our youth to get to read this? Because these are very interesting takes and they're very different and they're very relevant to today's
actually, people. You should not compare books with films in one way. See, my most successful book, perhaps one of the most successful books in the country itself, if you take the last 40, 50 years, Asura, in 14 languages now, not 9 as I said, it's 14 languages, including Sri Lankan, Indonesian. More and more it is coming.
Mm.
1.5 million all languages put together, 1.5 million, maybe by year end may reach, I don't know about the COVID, otherwise it may reach 1.8 million or 2 million copies. My CRK Ram, 40 crore people had watched.
Yes.
So that is the gap between this. But answering your question, a slew of others like us who have taken this, including me, all our books have multiplied the book sales. The book market, the youth have taken it because so many people only read compared to the number of people. It's an unfortunate fact in India where people, CEOs of company and other things say proudly that I don't read any book.
Yes.
Reading no other
habit is dying. Reading as a habit is dying.
It's not. It's not dying. Actually, book publishing industry is booming. India is the third biggest book market. It's not like 50 years back or 40 years back, the so-called bestsellers of those times, if they sell 10,000 copies, they are considered as all-time classic in India. Now we sell in millions. So book industry is booming. It is a misunderstanding that book industry is dying. But it has not boomed as much as it should for a country like India. We are 130 crore people.
So
we should be selling like in 20 crore, 30 crore kind of copies, a blockbuster. Instead, it is 10 lakh, 15 lakh. But it has boomed from 5,000, 10,000 to 10 lakh, 15 lakh copies.
But like when I'm just comparing, like when the amount we used to read, our children don't seem to be reading that. That way, you know, when you see that, that's when you feel like.
In that case, I can only say people are just buying the book and keeping them because book sales are going through the roof.
True. Maybe, I don't know.
Let me tell you who is not reading. I'm a reader profile.
Yes.
The people between the age group of 25 and 60 are not reading.
Oh, I would expect them to read. At least people between 40 and 65 to read.
They are not reading. After 60, people are reading. From the letters I get, I am telling my own this thing. Either it is below 25 or above 60, people are the people who interact a lot. And even all of us go to LitFest and all, this is a crowd also which is coming.
Yeah.
This group in the productive age group, perhaps, where all of us are there.
Too busy.
It's a fashion statement to say that I am too busy to read books.
So, when it comes to contemporary writers who write in your genre, like maybe Amish Tripathi or Ashwin Sanghi, Devdutt Patnaik, etc., etc. So, whose writing interests you the most and why?
All of them are good friends and all of their books are,
that's a very politically correct statement.
when you ask contemporary thing, I can only give politically correct answers. I said that. I read Devdutt a lot because other two people's writing, you write in the same. Ashwin Sanghi writes more contemporary mixed with this thing.
Yes.
Amish and I write in the same space. So Devdutt's book, I use it because he gives a lot of interpretation. Some of it I may not agree with. Many of it I may not agree with. I also tell him when I see it to him. When I see him, I also tell him. But that is how, if we have the same interpretation, there should be only one writer. There should not be two writers. But I read a lot of his works.
Yeah. come to your Asura, I mean your bestseller, describe your Ravan.
All have been bestsellers.
In a very humble way,
let me put it. All have been, four of them were in crossword.
That made you like really famous.
Yeah, that is a debut book, so that made me.
So, I mean, I am a big fan of Ravan because I find him more interesting than Rama. Controversial statement. But why did you choose Ravana? What about him do you like?
For me, Ravana was more human. I could relate with. Because you have all the flaws of human. Rather than a perfect or near perfect Ram. Not perfect. Nobody is perfect. Near perfect Ram.
Yeah.
But Ram is called Purnavadar and Krishna is called Paripurnavadar because Krishna has more flaws. That's an interesting way of looking at it. Ravan was... another way of looking at it, everything Ravan did, almost the same thing Krishna has done in his next life.
Yes.
Kind of, we see it in two different ways. That's how we see it. But if you just change the names and put many of the things, you can find that. Ravana was more relatable because he had a lot of flaws and more human. So I found, why not write it with him? And what is the fun in writing the same Ramayana? I didn't want to add any fantasy to it. One important difference, if you see where I differ from the other, my friends who write, I strip all the impossible things. It's very rational. My writing, I apply a lot of rationality to it. So there are no gods, there are no afterlife and suddenly somebody appearing and giving a boon. I have not used in any of my books. In my television series, for the audience needs it, and you are writing in a devotional space, I do that. But in books is where I write more from my heart. So in the books, whether it is Vanara, Asura, the two book Ajaya.
More real.
It is totally real. It's like happening now.
Yeah.
There are people who claim they are gods, but there is nothing like they suddenly get a boon. Ravana has 10, this thing. It's more like a historical fiction or a science fiction, not even science fiction, because like historical fiction. I try to give rational explanation for everything. So I don't say Brahmastra is nuclear weapon. That's one way of looking at it. Brahmastra is nuclear weapon or something like that. Another way is Brahmastra is a poetic imagination. It is like they are telling the evil of war. It's just an exaggeration. So what is Nagastra? It's a poison of the snakes. So even I go to that extent of rationalizing things in my books to make it believable. So this is where I differ. I don't try to glorify the past. I try to tell the past as how it would have been, perhaps.
So when you write like this and speak like this, have you been trolled, sent hate mail, or threatened?
No.
Some people can get offended, right? I mean,
this is one question I get asked in every interview, why I not been killed or lynched or something.
Because that's how things are now. Like, even anybody posts anything on Instagram, you're trolled like crazy.
See, what happens is, I explain the reasons to do that. And I don't go out of the way to humiliate or insult or anything. I'm just trying to bring what it is as it is, rather than trying to exaggerate it or trying to twist it or trying to make it to humiliate somebody or insult somebody. I approach the subject with a lot of respect. So I get back that respect which I am fortunate about. I am rarely being trolled or other things, and if at all somebody has done it, I ignore it also.
Yeah, that's
there is only one life. You have to tell what you have to tell, and
I think we're almost to the end, so I just have some simple small fun questions just to wind up. So if you were in a life-threatening situation, who amongst the mythological characters would you call for help and why?
Bali.
Why?
Bali is the most powerful character. Even God has to hide behind somewhere, and Ravan he killed directly. Bali had to hide and...
Okay, that's good. If you could invite two people from the world of the myth and two people from the real world over for dinner, who would they be?
Ravan. Ravana first. Duryodhana second. These two. And in the real world, perhaps I may call working in the same fashion. I will try to have perhaps Indira Gandhi and Jayalalitha.
The women are from the real world and the men are from the myth.
Yeah.
What is the one thing you would like to change about yourself?
One thing about, I like to change everything about myself, not one thing.
No, I mean, that's again a politically correct statement. If you had to choose between fame and money, what would you choose and why?
I would choose any time fame over money.
Money would follow, I guess.
Money, with fame you can make money.
Maybe, yeah.
With money you cannot make fame.
Fame. What's something new that's happening in your life right now?
I am writing a lot. Then I am trying to build a retreat. My wife has a resort where I go to write. But I am trying to develop something as a writing retreat and the way of life retreat. So
in Kerala?
Yes.
Oh,
it's called Planet Green Resorts. It is there in Wayanad.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place. I'm trying to make it better, and I'm trying to implement my ideas instead of her ideas.
Wishing you good luck. Hope it comes up soon.
I need a lot of it.
Who inspires you, or like who's your inspiration? Who inspires you? Or who's your inspiration? Any inspiration or anybody who's...
Inspiration in as a person... If you ask me, Gandhiji has influenced a lot because I think he was beyond the times, even at that time. Even now, we are not ready for him. Gandhiji has influenced a lot on things. But not that I agree with everything Gandhiji has told. He has told a lot of regressive things, and he supported Varnashrama Dharma and all, which I don't agree. But as a person, I think he was far beyond his times.
And In which subject were you the worst at school?
Maths.
Maths. Ditto. I think most creative people are bad at math. What was the naughtiest thing you ever did?
Lot of them I did. I buried a child one day and all. That could be
Okay.
perhaps I could have ended up in jail. I was in fourth standard. I buried a. We played graveyard. Instead, they wanted a different game, so I decided we'll make a graveyard, and a Christian graveyard at that. Because good that I chose Christian graveyard, otherwise I would have burned that guy. So one guy volunteered to be the ghost in the dead body, a 3-year-old kid. So four of us buried him. My brother saw it, and
Thankfully.
I was kind of priest, so I was Kerala, no? So all of us were there, Christian, Muslims, all of friends are like, everyone is there. So I was like the Christian priest. I was telling putting this thing. I was burying him, and suddenly the ghost ran away. I mean, the dead body stood up and ran away. So I was shouting at him, "Why are you running away?" Behind me, my brother had brought my father. He was standing with a stick. So, he tied me up and beat me black and blue. At that time, I was very angry, but now
Course, you
I would
know
have
it.
ended up in juvenile correction center or somewhere. We would have killed that kid.
That's actually quite funny. And what scares you? Really?
Scares? Scares me. If I wake up one day and I have no memory of the past or present, this one scary thing.
Yes. If you had to be anywhere else in the world other than in India, where would that be? And why?
Anywhere else in the world other than India, I will choose some island, say Mauritius or Maldives or something like that.
I thought you would choose something like Greece or something because they have so much mythology, like in India,
No,
to write
no.
about.
I am more of a tropical guy. I want warm places. I'm not very happy with cold places.
Have you ever been to our city, Nagpur? What
Yeah.
comes to your... Oh, you've been. Oh, that's nice.
I come to the same, I have given a speech there also, the SDR Knowledge Foundation.
Oh, okay.
I come there 3 years back, I think, before they had
Before the...
before they had started their place.
They haven't done enough publicity. I didn't know about it. What comes to your mind when you think of Nagpur?
Nagpur is in Mahabharata, it is Takshaka's place.
Oh,
One of the
Rakshasa's
places, no, Naga's
place.
place.
Takshaka, okay. Huh.
Some people claim it is there. So that's the first thing which comes to my mind. Then the second thing is it is the headquarters of RSS. And the third thing which comes is it is where Ambedkar had converted to Islam and challenged. So these are the things. And orange, of course.
What's the best compliment you have ever received?
Best compliment I ever received, a few people have considered me funny. That might be the compliment that I received.
That's sweet. Describe yourself in 5 words.
My God. I can write
This
500 words.
no, these questions basically are because we know the writer. We like writer as in we know your writing, we know your books, but we want to know the person behind the books. That's why these
Okay,
questions.
five words. I am still boyish in my attitude, in the sense that
At heart.
young at heart, not young. I am like a 8-year-old or a 10-year-old, and I am thinking about things. The kind of this thing I have. So it is not like 20 years. I am like 8-year, 10-year-old. So that boyishness, childishness. Jump over things, to climb somewhere, all those things still is there. That is one thing. I friendly, second, then I like to think I can tell jokes. I cannot sing to save my life, but I can't keep singing to annoy people. That's a fourth thing. And I am imaginative.
That we know. Thank you. Yeah. And the last one, what was the happiest moment in your life?
When the daughter was born?
Ananya. My daughter's name is Ananya too.
Oh, okay.
So on that happy note, I'm like really thankful for sparing your time. And I think your books, your interests and your personality, I think we could bring out a little for our viewers today to know more about you. And we really enjoyed this. I was looking for some questions from the audience, but I'm not sure. I didn't get any yet.
Actually, it was a very great session and quite knowledgeable. I think people have received all the knowledge and they must have cleared all the doubts. That's why I have received only two questions, and that is, one is very common. It's like, why did Kattappa kill Bahubali?
That's already that's given the common answer in the second one.
That's just for fun, maybe. And one has appreciated the session. She said she is Nishat Nanjiani Sharma. She said it's quite interesting session. People have really enjoyed, and it's a really great session. Like, they have
Thank
cleared
you.
All the
Thank
doubts.
You,
really, sir. And from my side, I found you're a very interesting person, sir. Especially in the rapid fire questions. Thank you so much, sir. And thank you so much, ma'am. I extend my gratitude to Mr. Anand Neelkantan and Ms. Madhavi Naidu for this valuable session and giving their precious time for SGR Knowledge Series. I also thank Chairman of Raisoni Group of Institution, Mr. Sunil Raisoni, for giving this opportunity to conduct this session. I also thank to all our viewers for their presence to make this event a great success. So stay tuned for more event updates. You can subscribe our SGR KF Knowledge Facebook channel, Facebook page, and OCLF YouTube channel. Till then, goodbye. Take care. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madhavi. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
20 years of existence. 2 universities. 23 educational institutes offering 137 courses. Raisoni Group of Institutions, a vision beyond.